Let's do that hockey.
Welcome to Dauber Prospects Report, a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. This is report number 49. I'm Victor Nuno, one of the co-hosts here. And with me is Peter Harling. How you doing, Pete?
El Nuno. I'm really good, bud. I'm really good. I had a good Oscar party this weekend. The Oscars were a good show, no controversy, and got another live game in Ottawa. I got to tell you, man, the 67s put on a much better production value than Kingston. You can understand what the scoreboard guy is saying when he announces things. And they announce them right away. In Kingston, it's like 5 minutes later, you get the goal announcement. And they have a wicked video screen. And they show the replay of goals and important plays right away. It's awesome. Yeah. And it's trade deadline in both NHL and fantasy. We're going to be talking about prospects moved on the NHL trade deadline. And like all my fantasy leagues have trade deadlines like this weekend coming up. So busy, busy. How about you?
Yeah, I was doing a bit of travel, then came back to a mountain of work, as tends to happen, but it was good. And, you know, speaking of trades, I think I have a live trade to pitch you here. You want to hear it?
Do I ever?
Well, in our Dauber Prospects League, I am going for it. You're a little bit retooling, and we actually made a trade earlier in the season that I think is working out just fine for everybody as the parameters were set. And I'm still looking to compete. I got a little bit of cap issues. I have Larkin injured and Grundstrom on IR, but I'm going to be close to over the cap. So I need to clear out a couple of contracts. And I'm thinking that, you know, these guys are both RFAs. So you basically rent them from me for the end of the season and then free drops. And maybe I'll give you a pick upgrade. What do you think about that?
Well, I've got lots of cap space. So let's hear your pitch.
Well, the two guys that are, you know, nothing, Grundstrom is injured. Isaac Lundestrom is, you know, I mean, he's someone maybe you'd want to keep, but probably not. They're both RFAs at the end of the season. And maybe a pick upgrade, like give you a second for a third.
I think we have a deal here. So I'm going to move up around in the draft for accommodating two roster spaces and about $2 million in cap space for you for like another 2 weeks of the regular season. And these are both players that I'm not long-term contractually obligated to. Evan, you might have to fix that. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like a win-win. You get some value and relief to help you with your load. And I move up around in the draft for basically nothing. Dude, we got a deal.
Let's do it. I sent it. It's good. I'm happy. You're happy. That's the way it should be. And it looks like it's going to be an interesting playoffs. I'm not sure I can win, but it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. So handshake. Let's do it. That's how it's done. Everybody wins.
Right on, right on.
So as we mentioned, today's episode, we're going to talk about prospects who got traded. We're going to focus mainly on the prospects. And this episode is brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and DraftKings. Follow at HockeyPodNet for many great podcasts. You can use DraftKings promo code THPN for listening to the show. More on this in a bit. And we're also proudly sponsored by Fantrax, the ultimate league manager for any dynasty sport you play. It is completely customizable for however you want to set up your league, from scoring categories, an amazing draft room to host the draft, draft pick trading, and a treasury option, plus so much more. Use our promo code to sign up for a free league using the link fantrax.com/DPR show. And Pete, I know I was away a little bit this weekend, as I mentioned, so I asked you to help with some of the prep, and you came through with flying colors, and you even numbered the trade, so it's easy to follow. So let's start off with trade number one, which I think was a pretty big one.
Right. So just a reminder as well, we're focusing on the prospects only. There's been, you know, it's a week out now almost from the trade deadline by the time you're listening to this. So this will be kind of old news, and you've probably listened to a number of other podcasts dissecting the trade deadline. And there's some really great shows out there that I listened to this week doing such, like Fantasy Hockey Life, starring Victor Nuno and Jesse Sevier. You guys did a great job talking about mostly the NHL players. And Keepin Carlson had a good show as well with my friend Steve Laidlaw on there. And Steve's a great podcast guest. We got to get him back on here, Victor. So we're going to keep it fresh, and we're going to stick in our own wheelhouse and talk about just the prospects. So the first trade we're going to talk about was a whopper for that. Trade number one is Carolina Hurricanes acquiring Jake Guentzel and Ty Smith from the Pittsburgh Penguins for two draft picks and three prospects and one player. So the player going back was Bunting, but the prospects is particularly what we're going to talk about. Ville Koivunen, Vasily Ponomarev, and Cruz Lucius are the prospects that Pittsburgh acquired. Now, what's really interesting timing about the trade deadline here is it comes right after about 10 of the Dauber Prospects writers collaborated to do the organizational prospect rankings. And Carolina ranked very well. Before the trade, these three players that they just traded away were all within their top 15 prospects on our consensus rankings. So Ponomarev was the sixth best prospect, Koivunen was seventh, and Cruz Lucius was 10. So three of their top 10 prospects traded to rent an injured Jake Guentzel. And so before the trade, Pittsburgh's prospect pool is pretty bleak. Their overall score was 58. And after the trade, it's increased to 65. So Ponomarev and Koivunen cracked their top five. So the updated Pittsburgh Penguins prospect rankings is Braden Yeager, Owen Pickering, Joel Blomqvist, Vasily Ponomarev, Ville Koivunen, and Cruz Lucius cracks their top 15 as well at 12. How he's lower on Pittsburgh than he was in Carolina, I'm not sure, but he is. So that's a pretty great win for Pittsburgh. So let's break down some of these guys overall. I guess actually, before I do that, overall, you could argue that the return for Guentzel in this trade is kind of low, right? I think you guys said the same thing on your episode. But you got to remember, he's an expiring contract heading to unrestricted free agency. So there's a possibility that if he likes Pittsburgh, he just goes back in the offseason and signs back with Pittsburgh. So I think that the three decent and close to NHL-ready prospects and a conditional first and a fifth-round pick, depending on whatever those conditions are, I don't know, is a pretty good return for a rental player. The fantasy value of the three prospects acquired is increased, in my opinion, as their path to the NHL just got a little bit easier, being in a shallower pool, and Pittsburgh is like one of the oldest teams, so there'll be some roster turnover sooner than later in Pittsburgh as compared to Carolina. There's a lot less depth and competition for NHL rosters. They're older, and the core in Pittsburgh is consuming so much cap space with Malkin, Crosby, Letang, and Erik Karlsson that they're going to need players on entry-level contracts to fill in all the gaps on the roster. And I think that's the real motivation where Dubas was going with these guys that are close to NHL ready. So the first one out of the trio that we'll talk about, and we'll bounce back and forth between these guys, Victor, but I'll start us off with Ville Koivunen. He's a winger center. He's 6 foot, 172 pounds, and he's 20 years old. For everyone following on Fantrax leagues, he is 8% rostered. So pretty available outside of super deep leagues even. So having a breakout season in his third year in Liga currently, he's 57 games played and he has 55 points, 21 goals and 34 assists. He's in the first year of his three-year entry-level contract, and he's on loan, I believe, back in Finland. I'm expecting him to arrive in North America next season, full-time, and I wouldn't be surprised if he finishes the year in North America this year, once it's all wrapped up over in Europe, and he'll play out a little bit, probably in the American Hockey League, in their AHL affiliate. Last year, he did exactly that. He finished the year in the AHL playing 12 games with the Chicago Wolves, but he only had one goal in those 12 games. So looking at his advanced stats or chart from Hockey Prospecting, his star probabilities has been declining ever since his DO. What's DO? Draft minus two?
D0.
Right. D0. So his draft year. 13%, and then it's gone down to 5 to 2, now to 0%. His NHL probabilities has actually maintained pretty relevant consistency, 49% from his draft season to 41% now. So he's a projectable NHL player. He's just going to be a depth kind of guy. His comparables are best case scenario. You're looking at someone like Boone Jenner, which I think is pretty good from a fantasy point of view. And you have a little bit muted offensive counting stats, but he'll need to make up for that in some of his other areas. I'm just getting to learn to read these wicked awesome Fantasy Hockey Life cards. And I'm looking at where his bash is to see how good that is.
Well, I can do that part if you want.
It's pretty low. So maybe the Boone Jenner comparison isn't great. But anyways, like I was saying, Vidley Koivun is a player that I think you can insert into the Penguins' top prospects. If you own him in your fantasy league, I think the estimated time of arrival just got a little bit closer, a little bit shorter. Not necessarily a player I'd be scrambling to get, but I think it's a good win for the Penguins to shore up some of their lack of prospect depth. What's your take on Koivun, Victor?
Yeah, I 100% agree with what you said. This really, I think it was a good deal for both sides that, you know, Carolina gets the rental and the Penguins prospect system is just bereft of high-end talent, you know, outside of a couple of exceptions. And so this really beefed up their chances. And whenever Sid and, you know, Malkin already seems like he's really slowing down, when they start to rebuild, it's going to be really rough. Unless they get some of these kind of assets. So not that this was going to turn the ship completely around, but they got three pretty decent assets, you know, three guys that could play in the NHL, maybe not as stars, but as, you know, depth pieces with some upside. And I think that's really smart. And Koivunen, sorry, who we're starting with, he has kind of trended up a little bit. I think, yeah, he doesn't have the bash of Boone Jenner. He certainly doesn't hit. He doesn't even shoot very much. And even his blocks are sort of like close to average. So his bash isn't going to be there, but he's a good play driving winger. I don't know that he's a center, but he's one of these guys that I think can play in your bottom six, which isn't very interesting or relevant for fantasy, but for an NHL organization, it adds depth to the team. It adds, you know, some guys that can play minutes and potentially be on decent contracts and all that kind of stuff. So there's value to the team, but Ville Koivunen, I personally don't really have any interest in him in fantasy. I don't think he's going to be, unless there's value in just having a guy who's playing in the league and who is going to make it, you know, because I do think he will. I do think he'll play games, you know, if your measuring stick is the, you know, 200 NHL game mark, I think he gets there, but I don't think he's going to be super valuable in fantasy. Ready for the next one?
Let's move on.
Yeah. So the next one is a little bit more exciting, I would say. Cruz Lucius, he is 3% rostered on Fantrax, so widely available as well. He was a fourth round pick by Carolina in 2022. By the way, the other thing I was going to say is, from Carolina's perspective, this is why you have a strong prospect pool, and this is exactly how you leverage your strength. You don't need all these guys to play for you, but you can use them as assets to get guys like Jake Guentzel, which is exactly what you should be doing. But anyways, back to Cruz Lucius, who is Chaz Lucius's younger brother, who is a pretty highly touted prospect for the Winnipeg Jets. And he, although he's had some up and down development, Chaz Lucius is doing decently in the AHL now. But Cruz is still in the NCAA. He's got decent size, 6'180", and he was at the USNTDP, but he didn't score a whole bunch. The last two seasons, though, he's been at the University of Wisconsin. And Wisconsin last year was not great. This year they're better, but he's basically a point per game in college, which is pretty incredible production, and his stock has really risen since taken in the fourth round. I definitely think that his projectability to the NHL with his move to Pittsburgh increased tremendously. I mean, for all these guys, it did. They were going to have a hard time making it in Carolina. They're going to have a much easier time making it in Pittsburgh. And Cruz is probably one of the prospects that has the highest upside, I think, of all the prospects that were moved this season. But I think there's also some more questions about him. And in fact, if you take the three that Pittsburgh got, Lucius probably has the most fantasy upside, but the most questions just in terms of how many NHL games he's going to play. So that volatility can be difficult, but in fantasy, you don't care about that, right? Cause you roster the guy and, you know, hopefully he hits. And if not, you just dump him. You don't have to worry about him as an actual asset to your organization. Looking at his hockey prospecting, he's close to like 12% chance of being a star right now, and he's hovered in that 12-21% chance. I should also mention that I wrote about him for EP Ringside, and I got some good quotes from people that have watched him in college. And one thing I would say that was echoed there is that even though he looks really good in college, I think there's serious questions about how translatable his game is to the NHL. And a lot of that has to do with his off-puck play. And we've talked about that before in here with guys like Shane Malloy. And it is rough. When you watch him away from the puck, Cruz Lucius is not fun to watch. It's kind of ugly. So that is going to be a big concern when he tries to translate his game to the AHL. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean he can't do it. I don't think it's a lack of skill. It's maybe more just what he's asked to do, or I don't know if he's disinterested. But he seems to lack some awareness and definite refinement in his 200-foot game. So that's going to be an issue. He shoots a lot. He doesn't hit or block very much, but his skill is basically scoring. And he's really good around the net. He's really opportunistic. He knows how to get himself in the right position to shoot and score, and he can play make as well. The PNHLA has him looking at somewhere between a first and second liner. So, I mean, this is the kind of bet you want to make on a player. And I would definitely be interested in having him. And hopefully, like, I'm excited about this move to Pittsburgh because he can go to the AHL next year and he can start playing and hopefully improve his game and then maybe get a call up as early as the year after that. And that's great. And I don't know what the Penguins are going to look like when he's ready, but it's going to, like, he has some high upside. So I would take that gamble, Pete, but I would also understand that there's some question marks there with his translatability. And if somebody wanted to give me a more secure asset for him, I'd probably entertain that. What do you think about Cruz Lucius?
I'm curious. I really want to see what he does at the pro level. And I haven't really had a lot of opportunity to see him live playing in the NCAA. So my eye test on him is pretty much zero. Although I think it sounds like there's some pretty good upside there. A little bit of risk reward with this prospect. I think if he hits, I think it'll be good. And if he misses, I think it'll be very wide. So let's see how he plays in the American Hockey League, because your off-puck concerns won't fly in the American Hockey League the way they do in the NCAA. If he's not responsible without the puck, or if he doesn't contribute without the puck, like Shane said, like, how much time do you actually have the puck? It's like 2% of the time. So when you don't have the puck, that other 98%, what value are you bringing? So that is really concerning to hear that that's a red flag in his game. So I'm looking forward to seeing him in the American Hockey League. His Fantrax rostership, as you said, is ridiculously low. So there's time to put him on your watch list. Or if you're in a really deep league, I would consider snapping him up and hoping for the best, seeing what happens next season with him. All right, so the third and final player in this trade was Vasily Ponomareyov. He's 9% rostered on Fantrax, so he's the most rostered player. And he's the most NHL-ready player, I would say, at this point as well. The Fantrax, actually, speaking of his Fantrax rostership, they had this to say on their analysis of the trade, that Ponomareyov is likely the most NHL-ready of the three prospects heading to the Penguins. He has 2 points in two games with the Hurricanes this season, and he's added 29 points over 41 contests between AHL Tucson and AHL Chicago. Ponomareyov is more of a defense-first center with some sneaky playmaking. He's unlikely to see anything more than third-line duties, as long as Sid Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and Lars Ellers are all on the Penguins roster. Well, the good news for Ponomareyov is he's young. So he can outweigh these guys, and I think we can count on Malkin and Lars Eller being the first two players to step aside for him. It's actually his birthday today, Victor, as we're recording this. He's a March 13th birthday, so happy birthday, Vasily, if you're listening. Mm-hmm. So what he is a 6 foot, 176-pound center, and he's well-acclimated to North America. He played two seasons in the Q, and then went back for a year in Russia at the 21-22 season. I'm not sure if that was COVID related or not, but then he came back to North America in 22-23 for a full tour of duty in the American Hockey League, where he posted 46 points in 64 games. That's pretty good. And as we mentioned before, he's played two games in the NHL already this year, and he's got 2 points in those games. He's only got a 1% star probability in hockey prospecting, and his NHL probability is down to 35%, so we're not talking about a lock to make it here. It sounds like he's a good option to be a a Lars Eller replacement, perhaps, you know, a depth middle to bottom six center that's not devoid of offensive upside that can contribute offensively, but his main purpose will be win faceoffs and play a responsible defensive game. His comparable players are pretty underwhelming overall. I see Kirby Dach as a good full comparison comp in there. Most of the other guys are busts. Maxime Quanta was a good draft year comparable. I don't think he's got that kind of size or power to his game. So yeah, we'll see what he does now that he's got a new team to play for. And I'd like to hear what you have to think about Pomeroy, Victor. I think someone's offering me in a trade in fantasy league somewhere. I think that's you. Do you own him?
Yeah, I do, in a couple places. Actually, the trade we made at the beginning, and originally I was trying to send him and a different player with more term to you, and you didn't like that. So, I agree with everything you said. I think that he is a very good two-way guy. I think he's kind of one of these guys that's difficult to play against, kind of a pain. You know, he's not like the biggest guy, but he's just a really strong two-way player. His Corsi in the AHL has been 51% this year, was 42 last year. So he drives play well. He doesn't hit or shoot a lot, but he blocks a decent amount for a forward. And currently his PNHL has him looking like a 40-point player. And he's kind of, when you look at Mason's graph in the NHL ranking, it looks consistent. Like, he's been basically at a 40 to 45 point player the last five seasons, and I think that's what he's going to be like at best. he's not going to score a lot, but he's someone who can be in your lineup, be a bottom six player, and, you know, maybe every once in a while you'll stream him, you know, in a redraft league kind of thing. But I don't think he's going to be someone that you hang your hat on. What I really find annoying is that his name is spelled like seven different ways across all the different platforms. So when you're trying to look him up, it's different everywhere. Ponomaryov, or sometimes it's Ponomarev. And the Vasily is sometimes with a Y and sometimes with an I. So anyways, if you're like trying to figure out where to find him, just try a bunch of different combinations and maybe you'll figure it out.
Yeah, just go, if you're looking for him on Elite Prospects, just go to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Go to In the System, you'll find them there.
There you go.
Trade number two. The first one was a whopper. So this one is a pretty good trade too, because it's a one-for-one prospect for prospect. And it's the Montreal Canadiens and Anaheim Ducks exchanging Jacob Perreault for Yan Misak. So let's talk about these guys, Victor. Comparing them between the two of them, I'll start with Jacob Perreault. What we have here is a 21-year-old right winger. He's 5'11", 192, and he's 11% rostered on Fantrax. He was drafted by the Ducks in 2020. He's a late first-round pick. They got him 27th overall. He is a Montreal native, so you kind of always love to see the players going back to their hometown. He's going to report to Laval, play in the AHL for likely the balance of this season. Well, maybe he'll get a cup of coffee. We'll see. He's only played 2 years in the Ontario Hockey League. And then COVID hit in his draft plus one year. So he was a COVID AHL early graduate. He played really well in that season in a depleted American Hockey League, because a lot of those guys were taxing in the NHL. So he scored 17 points in 27 games as an 18-year-old. And his stock started trending up pretty hard because of that. Then he never went back to the OHL. He played the next season in the American Hockey League too. And ever since that breakout season in his D plus one as an 18-year-old, his stock has actually been kind of trending down a little bit as he's coming back down to earth. And he's struggled to maintain the trajectory that saw that year. He had a down year last year with 19 points in 48 games, but he's starting to buck the trend a little bit. He's coming back up. He's on pace for 28 points this season through 47 games. So between these two guys, Victor, I think Perreault is the better player in the deal. But Montreal has tremendous prospect depth. So his NHL opportunity in Montreal may be worse than it was in Anaheim. Not that Anaheim has a poor prospect pool. Their top end is as good or better, I'd say, Montreal's. But when you look at the overall number of quality prospects that both teams have, I think Montreal has the trump card there. I scored Perreault a 5 overall in the OR rankings, and Jan Mysek didn't even make my Habs top 15 prospects. Mysek also makes my Ducks top 15 now that he's there, and I score him as a 3 overall. And Perreault does make the Montreal Canadiens top 15 prospects for me, but barely. I have him 14th with a score of 5 overall, like I said. So while I think Montreal wins this trade and gets the better player between the two, I think the fantasy value is actually opposite in this scenario. I think it couldn't hurt Mysek's fantasy value. Not that I think it's very high. I don't have a lot of faith in him being an NHL player, but I think it makes things harder for Perreault. What do you think?
Well, what is a podcast without a little bit of disagreement?
Awesome.
I might disagree a little bit with what you said, although I personally don't have either of these guys ranked on my organizational ranks. I didn't before and I don't after. And I think that speaks more to the quality of both of these prospect pools. They're just both pretty darn good. So, but I don't quibble too much with you having Perreault where you had him, because I do think he's someone who has a pretty decent upside. And I think this is also an example, as you mentioned, with him playing early in the AHL, this is an example of how that can go awry. I don't think that was good for him, although it was impressive what he did in the AHL. It derailed his development, in my opinion, because he was asked to do a lot of things that he just wasn't really ready for, and he needed another season or two to dominate the OHL, which he, you know, did pretty well in 1920 in his original draft season. He had 70 points in 57 games, but you would have liked to see him just tear it up the season after that, and he couldn't do that. He didn't have the opportunity. So then he had to really mature his game very quickly, and it was tough for him. And that is kind of the issue with him, is that he's basically a scorer. His off puck game isn't great. It's not horrible, but he has improved that quite a bit, but he's really more of a scorer. He has a tremendous shot, and he has some pretty decent upside, I think, if they can figure out the right situation for him, for Jakub Perreault. And yeah, in case people are wondering, this is the brother of Gay Perreault, who was just drafted last season, and the son of Yannick Perreault. And he's from Montreal. He's from Quebec. And so I think that's cool. You know, him going home, maybe it was hard for him being down in sunny Southern California. And maybe it was a little hard to focus on certain hockey things. I don't know. But maybe this going home for him is really good. And I think there's certainly a lot of reasons to believe that that could be the case. And I could see Montreal really unlocking his true potential. And I'd be very excited for that. Because right now, Jakub Perreault's stock is pretty low. You know, his PNHL is looking like 35. And he's looking like not an NHLer. And I think his upside is higher than that. Looking at his fantasy hockey life card, he shoots a decent amount. His hits are kind of low. His blocks are actually pretty decent, surprisingly, for an offensive forward. But really, his points upside is really what it's all about. His bash isn't really going to carry him. And he's never going to win any Selke trophies or anything. But I think he's gotten to the point where he's decent enough off the puck that he can survive in an NHL lineup in the right situation. You know, we've seen Montreal rehab a couple of players' careers. Like, you know, they just did with Monahan. That was kind of cool. Doc was looking really good before his injury. So maybe they can do that. Maybe they can find the right opportunity for him. So I do think that there's some upside there, and I would take a speculative add on Pro if I could.
I want to just quickly expand on the point you made there about his being derailed going into the AHL too soon. I totally agree with you, and here's why I think that is. Like I said, the AHL that season was a depleted league, right? You had a lot of the star players on taxi squads, specifically goalies, right? So he got an elevated position in a depleted league, scoring against poor quality goaltending. So looked good. But then the following season, when everything came back into balance and the better players were all back and the better goaltending was back, that's when they should have sent him back to junior for his fourth and final season of junior eligibility, because he didn't develop at all. In fact, he regressed that season playing above his weight class. You know, he's being outpunched both with goaltending and skaters as well. So I think that's where the big breakdown came in his development. Just wanted to get that in there.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right, now, so let's move on to Misak.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think I kind of disagree with you here, but in a not super meaningful way. And that is, I do think Misak is going to be an NHLer. I think he's going to be useful to the Ducks. I don't know that he'll be useful to your fantasy team, though. So that's the thing. He's 6% rostered. He's a 2020 pick. Sorry, 2020 second round pick by the Habs. He has also had a very weird development because he's Czech and he played initially in Czechia when he was developing and then came over halfway through his draft season to Hamilton where he did really well and he played the other half season in Czechia. So it was kind of like a strange evaluation. Then he went back to Czechia at the beginning, COVID related, and then came to Laval in 2020-21 and then went back to the OHL in 21-22. Was with Hamilton and was really excellent in their Memorial Cup run, winning the OHL, and then was back in the AHL the last two seasons. So he's kind of just been all over the place. And I guess you could say as a positive note, last season was kind of tough for him in the AHL, but this season was much better. He was closer to a half point per game, but I really don't think the scoring is going to be the thing with him. He has been, he is a better, you know, 200-foot player. He's a more reliable, you know, bottom six forward that you can plug in your lineup and, you know, you can not have to worry about him too much. He can help drive play. He can eat up some minutes, but he's not someone that you're going to necessarily be relying on to score. His hockey prospecting, you know, looks like 0% chance of being a star the last 3 years, which I know people are like, that's harsh. It can't be zero, but it's very low. And his PNHLE is like 20 and it hasn't been above 40 for the past four seasons. So it's not looking good for Misak. His bash is actually pretty decent, though. He blocks a lot for a forward. He hits a fair amount, and he shoots a little bit less. But overall, his bash would give him a solid floor. So again, if you're a league where playing games and just having some periffs is kind of valuable, then Misak, you know, I think is pretty likely to play some NHL games. The Ducks are going to need some depth forwards moving forward. You know, they have some nice high-end players, but they're going to need some, you know, some meat and potatoes at the bottom of their lineup. And I think Misak could be that guy. And I think they were kind of frustrated with where Perreault was, and he wasn't going to be that kind of player. He was going to, you know, be a scorer or not. So I think they kind of were like, well, we'll swap kind of what we need and what we have, and kind of made sense for him. So not really a scoring option, but I think Misak could be interesting if you just need some games played. What do you think, Pete?
Yeah, I'm going to stick to my guns, and I still don't think he's an NHL player. He was good in junior in the OHL. I saw him live a couple of times, and he's off-puck play, like we were talking about with Lucius, is very questionable what the value is. You're saying he's got decent bash. Maybe that's something that he's developed over the last couple seasons playing in the American Hockey League. I look at his first year as an American Hockey League player, and his production was nearly non-existent. He had like 10 points in the first season or something like that, and he's doubled it to 20 points this year, which still doesn't really move the needle. Like, if in a full season in the American Hockey League you can only muster 20 points, what do you think his NHL offensive production would be? Less than that, which is not fantasy relevant. And if I already established I don't like what he does when he doesn't have the puck, like he's a good skilled offensive player, but he doesn't have, you know, Jaromir Jagr dynamic skill. So I'm just not sure what he brings to the table in an NHL team. So not a player I want to gamble on, I don't think.
Light the lamps with DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and sign up with code THPN. That's code THPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
All right. Trade number three. So this one is a little smaller trade. It is the San Jose Sharks send Anthony Duclair and a seventh round pick to Tampa Bay Lightning for Jack Thompson and a third round pick. So Tampa Bay Lightning really don't like having prospects in their system. They are the second worst in the organizational rankings, and Jack Thompson was one of their best prospects, and they sent him away for a rental player and a seventh round pick. So Jack Thompson is 4% rostered on Fantrax. He's a 2020 third round pick by Tampa. He's a 6 foot, 185 pound mobile defenseman. So that's on vogue these days. Y'all, bigger than 6 feet, good mobility. He's got strong numbers in the American Hockey League this season. And he's soon to be 20 years old. So he's still real young. I think I'm reading notes here. His star probability is low, 2%, next to zero. And his NHL probabilities has been slowly declining a little bit. He's got comps of guys like Luke Shen, maybe Brian Rafalski. Dustin Byfuglien, I think, is wishful thinking. He doesn't have any of the physicality that Byfuglien had, to the extent that Byfuglien had it. So I, you know, really like this trade for San Jose. They were probably going to lose Duclair for nothing in the offseason and let him walk. They go out and they trade a seventh round pick for a third round pick, and they get a top 10 to top 5 prospect in their system. I'm not sure where you would slate Jack Thompson in the prospect pool with the Sharks, Victor, but you know, I think this is a great trade for San Jose. I think it's a move of desperation by Tampa to try and get in the playoffs. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I have him slotting in at 13th on their list, but he certainly is an interesting prospect and one of these risers. I think this is classic Tampa, which we could all learn from. You know, you draft someone, and then as they start to show promise or improve, you know, you don't have to wait for them. You could move him for something, you know, for some asset. And Duclair certainly helps them more right now. And yeah, he's actually really come a long way since being drafted. He is looking really good in the AHL right now. He has 32 points in 46 games for Syracuse. He played his first couple games for the Barracuda as we're recording this. I know I was hearing from some of the people who cover the Sharks, and they were saying that they're all really kind of impressed with him right off the bat, that he's a really good puck mover, that he's really smart, and, you know, kind of just a stabilizing force. I don't think he has like tremendous offense or anything. I don't think you've uncovered the comp for Brian Rafalski was during his draft season, but that's kind of unlikely. And he definitely doesn't have the bash of a Dustin Byfuglien. He might be like a very light Ryan Suter type. That's more possible. You know, he is kind of a mobile kind of guy like that and has decent size, although he's not huge. And he doesn't hit or block very much. I think that's one of the concerns here in terms of like your fantasy. He's not a bash guy, but he does shoot a lot. So if they had him run a power play, which I don't think San Jose has their power play guy figured out at all for the future, it doesn't really seem like it'll be Kalen Addison. They don't really have anyone else. I don't know if it's Shakir, but, you know, they also have, you know, Havelead and some other guys. You know, maybe they'll draft someone this year. But, I mean, Jack Thompson is a guy that it could be. You know, Henry Thrun is another one, Cagnoni. No one is, like, earmarked for that position. So if you wanted to throw a dart as, yeah, maybe this is possible. He seems like a guy who's going to play Jack Thompson. Like, he's going to play bottom to middle pairing and just be kind of a stabilizing force. Again, with the low perifs, I think you'd be less excited about him. But if a guy who plays is useful, then Jack Thompson will be useful, I do think. And yeah, he was one of, I think this move kind of hurts him in terms of organizationally. It helps the Sharks, but it hurts him because in Tampa's system, he was looking like he was going to get time soon. I mean, he already played a game, but that was more because they had no other bodies. But he's close. I mean, he's pretty much ready. He's been in the AHL for 2 seasons. He could play on an AHL roster. And in Tampa, that was possibly more likely, although they're a competitive team. So it's also somewhat likely for the Sharks because they're so bad.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a great prospect, better prospect than fantasy prospect. And I think he's an NHL player, but, you know, I think this trade hurts his opportunity a little bit in that I think the San Jose is a worse team. So you might think it's easier for him to make the roster, but they've got more options and prospects for competition for roster spots. I don't think it's like detrimental, however. I don't think he was going to be ever going to be a power play one guy on either team. So, you know, a big minute bottom pairing guy. All right, next trade. Another prospect for prospect, essentially. We're talking Alex Nylander for Emil Bennstrom. So Alex Nylander goes from Pittsburgh Penguins, where he wasn't able to make the roster, to Columbus. And Bennstrom goes to the other direction, to Pittsburgh. So Nylander the brother of Wee Willie Nylander, is 6'1", 192 pounds. He's 26 years old. Spantrak's roster ship when I did the show prep on the weekend was 17%. That's possibly gone up since then. He's on his fourth team in six seasons, which is a bit of a red flag. He's kind of labeled as a bust this year, I would say, you know, not really seeming able to crack an NHL roster. He's a career AHL player with middle six upside, I think is what people are thinking. And he's got like zero peripheral value. So no hits, no blocks. Since the trade, which happened on February 22nd, so a little bit before the trade deadline, he's been in the NHL with Columbus and put up 7 points in his first seven games there, including a Hattie versus Vegas, no less. So after the trade, after any trade, there's often a honeymoon phase where player, you know, gets a fresh look, you know, clean slate, new coach, makes a good impression first off. Doesn't always sustain, however. So I suspect his NHL production and role will be short-lived. So if you got him in your fantasy league, if you're one of the 17% and people are looking for magic and they're lightning in a bottle here and want to offer you trade value for anything more than a career American Hockey League player value, if they're going to give you NHL player value for it, I would say sure. I would take that trade if I were you. What's your take on...
Yeah, I mean, I think I generally agree with you. Trading Nylander the lesser is probably a good idea. I would probably take just about anything someone offered me. Although it does turn my head a little bit to see the production he's enjoying in his brief stint so far in Columbus. And out of interest more than anything, I pulled up a evolving hockey rampum chart, regularized adjusted plus minus, for him and his brother, Alex and Willie Nylander. And Alex's looks better, which is kind of hilarious. William's defensive game looks terrible. His expected goals against and Corsi against look really bad. And Alex's look better than average, like pretty decent, actually. And his expected goals are basically similar. Willie is converting on way more of his chances, which is not terribly surprising. So I was like, okay, what is his 3-year average? Like, how does he look overall? Because he's had these limited games. I mean, he has 107 NHL games over six seasons, which is not a lot per season, right? And they actually look pretty decent. So I don't know. I'm kind of conflicted here. On the one hand, I agree with you and think like he's probably just not going to continue this and move on. But on the other hand, I'm like, maybe he just needs a serious, legit shot. I don't know exactly where I fall on that.
He's had four teams already in the last 6 years. He's got opportunities.
Yeah. No, I mean, you can't
sell high on a player unless he's high.
Yeah. Yeah, but is it possible that he kind of figures it out and becomes sort of a depth scorer? It's possible.
Sure, anything's possible. I traded Jordan Binnington when he was on a high. It just lasted about 3 years longer than I thought it would.
So in general, no, I don't think he's going to be anyone that you're going to regret trading. But it does give me a little bit of extra, like, interesting. The next guy is Emil Bemström that we're going to talk about. And he's 4% rostered on Fantrax. I have affectionately referred to Emil Bemström as Emil Bumström for a long time now because he's kind of a bum.
You're a bum! And that's all you'll ever be! A bum!
And generally... He does this thing where he does, you know, he gets some good deployment. He scores a little bit for a short time. He makes you kind of interested in him. And then he just kind of disappears, but he's actually still playing NHL games. And you're just like, what happened? He has a career point pace of 27 point pace over an 82 game season over his 214 games. So it's not very exciting, but he sometimes does the thing and it gets you kind of interested. I think that 200 NHL game mark is kind of where a lot of people think a breakout could happen. I don't think it's happening for Bemström, and I don't think it's going to happen. I also think the vibe in Pittsburgh is just awful, so I don't like that he's going there. I'm not sure that could help. I don't know that anyone could do super well there right now. Even Sid is having a hard time. So anyways, and Bemström's projection just doesn't look good. His underlyings also look terrible. His expected goals for per 60 are... really bad, like in the top 10% of the league. So I don't think there's much hope there. If I had to bet between these two, I would definitely take Nylander, but I also think both these guys are probably not much.
Well, let's move on then. Trade number 5, the Anaheim Ducks acquired Ben Myers from the Colorado Avalanche for a 5th-round pick. So Myers was a darling on a lot of scouting sites, NCAA free agent watch lists, as a player that I saw him play a little bit and I got a little excited and I drafted him and I've been disappointed ever since. He is 4% Fantrax rostered. He's 25 years old now. He's 5'11", 194. And in 29 NHL games, he's got a goal and 12 hits this season. In his career, he's played 54 games and has 6 goals and 0 assists. In the American Hockey League, it's been a slightly different story. 32 games played, he's got 11 goals and 14 assists for 25 points. Since the trade, he played a game already with the Ducks, playing on a line with Isaac Lundstrom and Jakob Silfverberg. And he got about 1340 of ice time, and he cleaned up on the faceoff 70%, 7 out of 10 draws. So what he is that we've talked about him on the podcast a couple times recently, so let's not dwell on him too much. He's a defensive forward. I mean, I think the trade out of Colorado at Anaheim gives him better opportunity, but I'm still not sure I'm seeing a player that's fantasy relevant here, Victor.
Definitely not. He's a good defensive forward that has basically zero offensive upside. So we can move along. The next trade is the Curtis McDermott to New Jersey for Zakhar Barkadov, who went to Colorado. I believe this was a signing issue. I think he was not going to sign, and so they traded his rights, and we'll see what happens in Colorado. Maybe they will sign him. Maybe they'll give him an opportunity. I'm not sure. He's playing over in the KHL. He's been in the KHL for several seasons. Last season, he had 18 points in 42 games, which was almost interesting. This season, 12 points in 51 games. Not super interesting. He plays for SKA. It's like an all-star team. And so you would think if he had a lot of more offensive talent, he would be doing that, but he's not. So he's 6'2", 198 pounds. I will say about Barkadov, B-A-R-D-A-K-A-O-V, he is a bash master. So he hits and blocks a lot. And so if that's interesting to you, if he can get in the NHL lineup, which I don't know that he's going to, I'm not even sure he's going to sign and come to North America. He never has played in North America. So I think it's kind of unlikely, but it's possible, you know, if Colorado can sign him as KHL, I'm not sure if the season's over. I think it's close to over. So it's possible that he could sign and come to the Avs for the playoffs. You know, and that could be interesting. Or for the end of the regular season for the fantasy playoffs. But I wouldn't expect much scoring for Barkadov. You, Pete?
No, not really. I'm moving right along. Next trade, trade number 7. This is another one that's pretty low on the radar, but I want to talk about it. Toronto Maple Leafs acquire Cade Weber from the Carolina Hurricanes for a 6th-round pick. So I'm not really sure where the Leafs are going on this one. Cade Weber's a left-shot defenseman. He's 23 years old. He's huge, 6'6", 194 pounds. He's got 0% Fantrax rostership. Watched him play a little bit in the Beanpot tournament with BU because TSN was showing those games here in Canada. And, well, he's hard to miss because he's monster big defenseman. And he's a master at shot blocking. He is a shot blocking machine. But he's got absolutely no offensive upside. He's got 116 career games played at the NCAA with BU, and he's got 16 points, only one goal in 4 college seasons. I'm not sure how that's possible. So from terms of fan track or fantasy, if you're looking for maybe the next Arbor Jack guy, like could he be the next Arbor Jack guy? Great big huge mean defenseman. Well, he's big, yes, but the offensive potential you get with Jack guy, such as it is just non-existent with this player. He's in his senior year at NCAA right now. So this possibility he could return for a fifth COVID season, I believe, or he could turn pro. But basically, unless the Leafs sign him by the 15th of August, after he decides not to return to, or he's not eligible for NCAA, whichever happens first, he could become an unrestricted free agent. So the Leafs spend a 6th-round pick on a guy that they have until this midsummer to sign, or he's just going to walk out of the organization. So you got to think that they're highly motivated to sign him, and you know, maybe they've had conversations with his agent and he's agreed that he'd sign with Toronto. I don't know. But even if he does, I'm not sure there's much opportunity here for him at the NHL level. So this is a really curious signing by the Leafs. He is a long shot at best to be an NHL player, and he'll have little to no fantasy value when he gets there. What do you think, Victor?
Yeah, I mean, he is going to be amazing for blocks if he makes it, because he is blocking up to 4 times a game right now. That's insane. So he could win your blocks category for you if he ends up getting in the lineup, but that's about all he's going to do. He does hit a fair amount, like 1 per game, but 4 blocks is just... Did I mention he hits 4 blocks a game?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're talking maybe Hal Gill. So while he's on his ELC, he might have value as a, you know, a single category stuffer, but that's about it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a point would be a miracle, I think. Artem Grishnikov is the next guy we're going to talk about. He was involved with a complicated trade between the Flames and the Devils and the Stars, where Kristanev ended up in Dallas, and there was some other pieces moving around. But he's the one who ended up in Calgary. So Artem Grishnikov, 2021 second round pick, 6'1", 194, left-handed D. His Corsi for the Texas Stars, he's been playing in the AHL, has been pretty decent. Actually, it was a little bit lower than 50%, but overall, he's been in the AHL. This season was his first, 5 points in 44 games, not super exciting. Scoring is not going to be his thing, but he does bash. Artem Grishnikov, really strong for hits. Blocks are also really good. Doesn't shoot a home bunch, but that peripheral floor should be high for him. And I've heard some people say that he's definitely like a kind of interesting player. I also think that he's very unlikely to become Chris Tanev, but he could end up being a Chris Tanev light sort of situation. And I think that maybe Calgary is thinking like, well, let's get someone who best case scenario could be similar to the guy we traded away. And anyway, so if Chris Tanev had any value in a league for all those peripherals, then maybe Grishnikov could be somewhat close to that. And especially on the cheaper contract, if you're in a salary cap league, then that's kind of interesting, because he seems like he's, you know, he's close enough to the NHL that he could play soon. He's already played 4-6 games for the Wranglers in Calgary. Maybe he gets a call up. Maybe he plays a little next season. He is close to being NHL ready, but I don't think you can expect points from Grishnikov, but you can expect hits and blocks.
Well, I'm more interested in him than Barkov or Cade Weber, of course. But in Calgary, I think between him and, say, Nikita Okachuk, I'd rather have Okachuk, who's got a little bit more NHL pedigree and does the same thing. All right. Trade number 9 between San Jose Sharks again and the Vegas Golden Knights. This one was a big one. Thomas Hertl goes to the Knights. Didn't see that one coming. And he goes with 2 third-round picks. So they get Thomas Hertl, who's got long-term contracts, not a rental, and they get 2 third-round picks for essentially 2 first-round picks, a 2025 first and David Edstrom, which was their first-round pick from 24, I think, just past draft. 23. Thanks. So Edstrom's 6'3", 190. He's a center. He's 10% rostered on Fantrax. And so I was much higher on Edstrom than the consensus and our fantasy rankings. I scored him as a value of 6, and the consensus value for him was 3.8. So I was definitely in the minority on that one, scoring him high, but I'm a believer in him. But what I find really curious about this, Victor, this trade, is San Jose already has David Edstrom. Yeah, they just call him Philip Bystedt. They're basically the same. They're both Swedish. They're both big guys, and they're both two-way physical centers. Their comps are really quite similar in their development curve and their expectations. So I guess, you know, they got a type, and he's the type that they like. How do you think that's going to work out? You got two guys that are a year apart and are very similar, big physical, two-way forwards. And you're talking about an ideal third line center here. So I guess they're just hedging their bets that one of these guys will develop into at least that, maybe one of them more, or maybe one of them less. But I guess they're doubling down on, we've got our future third line center here. What do you think?
Yeah, basically. I mean, if either one of these guys could be 70-80% of what Tomas Hertl was, they'd be pretty happy about that. And I think in terms of the hurdle part, people underestimate just how bad that contract was. That was Doug Wilson and Joe Will's last contract that they signed, and it was just awful. I mean, Hurdle being injured and giving him, 8 years until he's 36 years old, it was just horrible when you already knew the team was going to be bad. So they had to pay something to get rid of it. So the fact that they even got Edstrom is pretty great, because I don't know that he's like has super high upside, but agree that he could be a middle six forward, maybe center. I think he can be a center. And yeah, I mean, you're talking about the type of a big, mobile, physical forward who can play center and drive play. That's a good type to like. Like, you know, of all the types of players, that's a good one. And he can definitely do that. He's 19 years old right now, playing in the SHL. And he just turned 19 in February. So it's not like he's been 19 most of the season. He's got 19 points in 44 games for Frölunda, which is a really, really good team and really good system. So I think he has even potential to develop into more. I think a lot of people have really liked his game this year. His bash is reasonable. He doesn't hit, block, and shoot a ton, but he has some floor there. But I think his points upside is, you know, kind of in that second line. The ceiling is kind of like your second line, which, yeah, like you said, if one of these could improve just to the point where they're a second line, well, then you're laughing. But even if they're both bottom six forwards, you're still pretty happy, because these are going to be quality players are going to make everyone else's life easier around them. So yeah, I think this is a good move to get Edstrom. And yeah, I think both of these guys will come over maybe in a similar time, another year or two, and or maybe longer, and that could really allow the other skilled forwards make their lives a lot easier. And I think there's a lot of value to that. So I think this was good on the Sharks. And I think I heard that Hurdle, although he wanted to stay in San Jose, he was interested in playing for a contender, which Vegas certainly is. And so that was part of Mike Greer doing Hurdle a favor, which is nice, even though he already had a favor by that massive contract. Let's talk about the last one. Yep.
All right.
So this is Jeremy Hansel, and he is a 2023 sixth round pick. He was drafted as a double overager, which is always a little bit interesting to me. But he's a 6'1", 196 left-handed D. He is from Coquitlam, which I know how to say now because I've been there and I didn't know that beforehand, but I'm actually going there in a few weeks. If anyone's out there, I'll say hi, let me know. But that's in the BC area for those of you who don't know where that is. Hansel didn't really have a whole lot of star probability in the hockey prospecting model, and he's kind of trended down to the 1%. But what he is he's someone who has, I think, some pretty decent ability. He's been in the WHL the last 4 years. And this season, the last couple seasons, he's kind of been creeping towards point per game. He plays for Seattle. So when Seattle was really good, he was playing much more of a depth role. This season, he's playing a lot more, and 52 points in 61 games. So that's looking pretty good. And he's going to Nashville. I think Nashville knows how to evaluate and groom defensemen. So when I see them acquiring him, I think that that's probably good for him. But I don't really think there's much. I don't know that Jeremy Hansel has too much scoring potential. His PNHL is looking like a 25 to 30, which is not great. So it's probably nothing. Frankly, Pete, I'm kind of annoyed that you made me talk about him, other than mentioning Coquitlam, which is fun. Do you have anything nice to say about Jeremy Hansel?
Well, I've heard of him now, and I hadn't really before the trade. So congratulations, Hansel, on getting on the DPR show. This is a career benchmark for you, pal. That's all I got. All right, Victor's got another podcast to get onto, so we're going to put a bow on this episode, everybody. Thanks for listening to the report number 49. And remember, if you want to reach out to us, at DPR underscore show, at Farling, at Victor Nuno 12, at Cyber 91. Those are all our Twitter handles. Tell us what you want to hear about on the podcast. Tell us about how awesome we are. Tell us about how stupid we are. Whatever you want, let us hear about it. Don't forget to follow the Hockey Pod Net as well on Twitter, and look for other cool podcasts that they sponsor as well. You can subscribe and follow on your podcast aggregator of your choice. And if you really love us, go ahead and drop a 5-star review. We wouldn't say no. Thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the show. Until the next report, keep your stick on the ice.
That's the fact, Jack! That's the fact! Let's do that hockey.